Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. No, we don't. Well, we try not to, but some people just do it anyway, don't they, Dr. Jasek?
Yeah. Like what I was just saying, you know, sometimes people don't make a change until they get the wake up call. And, you know, I see this. It's, you know, people are really devastated and, you know, feel very guilty. And I see this a lot in some of the patients I see, you know, they're like, yeah, I fed the kibble and did all the vaccines and I didn't know. And now my dog has cancer. And, you know, we can't do what you don't know, but once you know, you should be doing something different. People go into their vet and they don't like what they're being told. They need to start pushing back, because the more and more stuff I hear, I think veterinarians are just, they're just so bamboozled by mainstream narrative. You know, they're just zombies. You know, they're just going, what's the narrative? What's the protocol? You know, it's not even medicine anymore. It's just, you know, it's like they go to the computer and, okay, this is the diagnosis, this is the treatment protocol. And they don't even look at the individual situations of the pets, because they're all different. Even if they're, you know, multiple pets present with similar symptoms, the whole scenario is different. And practitioners need to be looking at that. And that whole, to me, that's part of, you know, like at my business is animal healing arts. To me, that's part of the art of healing, is you're looking at the whole situation. That's why I have always let people come in with their pets, because I gain so much insight into what might be going on with the pet. When I can just, you know, you have a conversation and things come out in the conversation, then, you know, one thing leads to another and I can get a lot more information. You can kind of pick up on the energy of this, you know, situation. I just gained so much from that interaction with the person and the pet that I can't imagine practicing without that. And I think that has, you know, kind of precipitated this, you know, the vets just go on autopilot. Well, you know, they don't have a person there to interact with. They have the pet, they have this set of symptoms, must be this diagnosis, and this is the treatment, and send them out the door and next, please. I mean, that's what's going on. And it's, I think it's pretty tragic for our pets.
Yeah. I had an employee who had to rush her dog to the vet because he has laryngeal paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, she texted me and she said, they won't let me go in there with him. I'm freaking out. Now she's freaking out. I'm sure the dog's freaking out. Right? Because your human is not there.
Right. Totally. And I hear they're locking down more. I don't know. I don't watch, you know, mainstream news, but from what I understand, there's a whole, you know, big narrative about, you know, Colorado's got, you know, one of the highest rates of the Delta variant or whatever fear stuff they're putting out there now. And so it sounds like clinics are locking down even more. Like they were starting to let people in a little bit more. And now they're, you know, now they're locking down. Bottom line is, it sounds like clinics are going to be locking down even more. I think it's just going to go. And I don't think they want to open up. They don't want to open up. They don't want to, they, like I said, they can just operate in on autopilot, follow their computer algorithms on, you know, how to treat the pets. And that's that. They're not interested in really practicing true medicine.
No. You know, I had, and somebody that echoes that is Julianne Lee, who's the founder of Adored Beast. And, you know, she's had many, many holistic clinics over in Canada. When we were talking about this situation of medicine and how you actually diagnose. And it was funny because, you know, you and I have said for a long time that we ask a lot of questions, right? So we're like, mm-hmm. What's the dog's history? What's the dog eating? What are the treats? You know, everything. And that questioning takes so long. And she said that we had to have all the information, including what was going on in the home? And she said, and many times I invited the entire family to come in because I wanted to see what was stressing the dog out. Because she said, stress is a real thing for dogs. And we were primarily, this entire webinar was on leaky gut. And it was amazing that she said, look, stress definitely contributes to leaky gut. And so, but she was talking about what we always say, that it's a trial and error. And she said, and if you want a quick fix, you know, kind of the holistic way is not going to work, because you have to go this direction. And then if that, if it works, something works well for a couple of weeks, then that's great. But now maybe you have to move on to something else. So we were talking about the leaky gut, where you could do the leaky gut protocol. And then they do this thing where they go leaky gut, Fido's Flora, yeasty beast. They go back to Fido's Flora because there's all these different yeast die off when you're healing the leaky gut. So it was very interesting that she aligned very much with, and I think all the holistic groups and people and practitioners all align in that same realm, where it's like, it takes a while. We can't just walk in and say, well, this is what it is. I mean, yes, you can see patterns. You and I see patterns, and we can say, the dog's got flatulence. You're feeding raw food. Are you feeding processed treats? you know, that things like that. But I just thought it was incredibly interesting. Leaky gut was the very first protocol she ever developed. But I brought up the issue because one of our customers and one of your patients that you've seen with Frenchies, who have had that high liver enzyme level in the Frenchies. So I said, what do you think about these high, you know, liver enzymes? And I told her, I said, look, we primarily see it, or I've primarily seen it only in Frenchies, and Frenchies that can be on kibble, Frenchies that are on raw. It doesn't really matter, but it seems to be that Frenchie breed. And right off the bat, she said, I believe it's oxygen deprivation.
Oh, interesting.
She said, because of the way that they cannot breathe. And she said, it's not just in Frenchies. She said, it's going to be in the bully breed and even the smashed nose, smashed face dogs. And she said, because the liver is very dependent on oxygen. She said, it could be some other things. She said, but she really has seen that that's a genetic type thing.
That is really interesting. I've never really thought about that, but you know, it could be playing a role. And it's not like, you know, the dog can't breathe, but, you know, there's a difference between having a, you know, oxygen saturation of 98 and an oxygen saturation of 88, you know, when they put that little, you know, pulse ox thing on your finger, for people who've ever had that done, you know, you can measure your oxygen saturation. And if it was chronically just a little on the low side, well, sure, all the tissues are going to suffer then, because they're not getting, you know, there's, it can be, you know, sustainable oxygen levels, just like dogs can live on a kibble diet, but that's not optimal and they're not thriving. So it could be the same thing for with the with the low oxygen and the, you know, the smush faced dogs. That's real interesting theory, and thought about that, but it, you know, makes sense. And I think everything is usually somewhat multifactorial. There's more than one thing going on, but if the body isn't getting optimal oxygen, it's going to affect health for sure.
Well, it was unreal. All of the things that a leaky gut affects. The other thing that was interesting about this conversation, that she was saying, if you do not have the right bacteria in your gut, no matter what you do, you're never going to heal. So back to the processed foods, or the HPP foods, the sterile foods that, you know, certainly some information out there that says, okay, on the sterile foods and on kibble, that you are killing the good and the bad bacteria but that some of the stronger bad bacteria can survive and therefore is more harmful than the raw diet.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I think the really tricky part about that, though, is I think each individual has their own ideal microbiome. So that's why it's really hard to, you know, give a probiotic or give, you know, people will give fermented foods and things like that, oh, to add these bacteria in. And that's great if you happen to be giving the bacteria that that particular individual needs, but you might not be. And that's why I see a lot of mixed results. So that's why I think it's important. And I agree with her. We have to look at healing the gut, because if we heal the gut and then we feed an appropriate diet, so we're feeding the bacteria that we want to grow. I think I've gotten to where I think like the prebiotic approach, and not even necessarily adding in a prebiotic supplement, but feeding a species appropriate diet, that's going to feed the bacteria for that individual needs. Ideally, you know, it's like growing a garden. If you water it and fertilize it, you're going to have a lot better luck growing the things you want to grow. If you don't water and fertilize, you're going to get a bunch of weeds, which would be like the bad, you know, the bad bacteria. So I think focusing on gut health, I just agree with that 100%. It's just so important to get that gut healthy. And then the body knows what to do. And I think that's the thing. People yep. get so into what's the magical thing that's going to fix my pet. Well, you just can't do the magic bullet approach. It just doesn't work. It's multifactorial. And I think this gut stuff is really hard to straighten out, because it's hard. It's hard to evaluate, you know, are you having success? You look at the pet symptoms and the whole stress issue. I mean, I totally agree. I think that's huge for pets. You know, we just had a visiting shaman here last week, and, you know, she identifies, you know, this emotional connection and between pets and their people, because pets will take on their people's energies and their issues. And I've, you know, been able to talk to a few people that saw her and asked, and they said, oh my gosh, like my dog went home and just like started acting like a puppy again, because she sort of freed the pet from that responsibility of taking on these emotions. And do emotions affect the gut? Absolutely. And that's where all my emotions go. If I'm stressed, man, I got a tummy ache first thing. That's where my stress shows up. And I do think it's the same for pets. And I think, you know, making sure that your pet has an appropriate, you know, lifestyle. I think we were talking about this last week, make sure they're getting adequate exercise and mind engagement. You know, I did a phone consult with a client that they're looking at getting a puppy there. It's a German Shepherd Belgian Malinois cross. And she said, what do you like think about those breeds? And I said, I think the breeds are great, but you better be prepared to keep them busy. Actually, she's already a client of yours. I actually referred her back to you. I said, talk to Dee Dee and Rick about who they used to, you know, train their dog and stuff. So you might, I can't remember her name because I don't remember names, but you might be hearing from her. And I said, you just got to be prepared to keep that dog busy and, you know, engage their mind. And she said, well, we do a lot of hiking. I said, you know, that's great, the exercise, but those dogs want to use their mind. They're smart and they want something to do. They want to have to use their brain. So I, you know, encourage things like a little bit of agility or some nose work or something. Those aren't breeds that are going to be content just laying around the house. Matter of fact, they probably destroy your house if you want them to do that. You know, so, you know, if you want a dog, you know, like some breeds are really mellow. They're like, yeah, I'll just nap on the couch all day. I'm cool with that. You know, so you have to, I think, evaluate those can be big stressors for dogs. And I think that can really be a huge issue.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I always think when I see dogs that are crated all day. Mm-hmm. Like that would be like going to jail every day. No offense to my pet parents. I just, in my mind, I always look at it and think, and we did have to do some crating with Lozzie when she was, you know, we had to leave and she couldn't go with us. It was hot. So she had to go in the crate because she was tearing up those dog beds, right? Those couple of days. And I just hate that. But some dogs like the crates. I'm not saying the crates are bad, but I always wonder, do they think it's jail?
I think when it's prolonged, you know, I mean, I have talked to people who have adopted dogs, you know, that the history is people didn't have time for them. You know, they'd go off to work or whatever, and the dogs would be in the crate 8-10 hours a day. And then they thankfully realized this isn't a good life for the dog, and, you know, adopt them out or rehome them. And those dogs will not go in a crate. Like, they're like, I cannot get my dog in a crate for anything because the experience was so bad. So that tells me, yeah, the dog did look at it like jail. I mean, dogs, they're pack animals. They're not solitary animals. You want a pet that's content being solitary, you'd be much better off with a cat because they're okay hanging out and looking out the window. Dogs, they want to be with a pack. They're social. And yeah, I think hours and hours, I mean, a few hours of crating, or crating at night where they're kind of sleeping anyway, that's their den. The crate can be their den, but it's not like, you know, I think sometimes people get dogs for their evening and weekend entertainment. And that's really not fair to the dog.
No. And, you know, I will have to say this, that my concept of how dogs think is very different than our trainers, right? And because he's been around dogs for a long time, training dogs for a long time. And I remember he made this statement, dogs don't have an opinion. Right? Dogs don't, or dogs don't get to have an opinion. And then I think you did the interview with Doggy Dan as well. And so I asked Doggy Dan about that. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I think dogs do have an opinion. But mm-hmm. it is, do they get that opinion at this time? Right. So, for instance, if Lazzie wants to run out and attack this dog that's walking, along the street, she doesn't get an opinion to do that at that point. My command is first and foremost. And our dog is so well trained, not because of me. Let me just say that. That dog is well trained because of Rick, not me. Because, you know, I would let them get away with things. And he's like, you can't do that, Didi. There are certain things that they have to know that is a hard line. That's black and white. Can't do that.
Right. And you have to be consistent. You can't do it one way one day and one way another day. You know, I think that might be why men are sometimes better at training, because they're a little more black and white. You know, this is what it is. This is how we're going to do it. These are the rules. End of story. As you know, women are like, oh, but you gave me the sad eyes. You know,
this is once. And then the dog goes, hey, we did it once. So let's do it again.
Exactly. No, I can get it. And they know who they can get away with stuff with too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They'll work the parents just like human children will.
For sure. Hey, I wanted to ask you, when that shaman comes around you physically, do you feel a different energy being around somebody that has that type of spirit? Do you physically feel it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it's like, you know, the thing about tea, and I think this is probably common in shamanism in general, is they're completely upfront, transparent, call it like they see it, and will including call people out on their stuff, because a lot of times that's what's affecting the pet. So it's almost like you just got to put your real self, like being around her, I just feel like I just want to put my real self out there. Like there's no facades, no barriers. But yeah, it's just a very just pure and genuine a type of energy. It just feels great having her here. She was here for two full days last week, and it was awesome. And the feedback was really awesome. You know, number of people leave the house crying because she nails stuff, you know, she's kind, she's not mean, but she will call it like she sees it. And what she picks up on, she puts it out there. And whether or not people want to hear it or not, you know, or what they're going to do with the information is up to them. But yeah, it's just a very honest, pure energy.
What are some of the reasons that pet parents bring their dogs to tea?
Well, several itchy dogs. We had several that were itchy. Others with some behavioral stuff, like anxiety, changes in their changes in how they are reacting to other people. You know, chronic illnesses, cancer, a couple of cancer patients. And then she would say some things like, so there was one dog that had its spleen removed, had a tumor and had its spleen removed. And Teague said something about, she could just like visualize like a bunch of bugs inside the abdomen. There was just like this area where there was like, just in her mind's eye, what she was seeing was just some bugs, and she would like clear that. And this was to help prevent, you know, recurrence, cancer, you know, just removing any of that, you know, type of stagnation. And then it's, you know, it's a lot of work on the people and what the people are dealing with and what their stressors are. So it's really quite fascinating. And actually my newest employee that just started a couple of weeks ago, as I have learned from her, also studies shamanism. So she actually does this, a similar type of work. So that's pretty cool. So we might be offering more of that type of thing on a more regular basis. So
oh, that's cool.
We're trying to just figure all that out. I mean, Teague is very excited to come back, but she usually only comes back like every other month. She lives in Utah, so she doesn't come back. But she did, you know, the end of the doctor's rounds I did last night with Dogs Naturally, somebody like left a comment that said that they actually saw her on the newsletter that we sent out, and they couldn't come in here, but they had just done a remote session with her and said that was, you know, really cool. So definitely something I want to integrate more into our practice, because I think it can be a really important kind of missing link. And pets that like just don't get better. Just, you know, doing all the things that seem like the right things, but then we just can't budget. And I think this emotional piece can be huge. If you try, you know, just having a unique approach, people, you know, come in for that approach. And I mean, a new patient consult for me, even if it's a relatively healthy pet, oftentimes will be 45 minutes or an hour, you know, and we allow that time and charge appropriately. And people don't seem to have a problem with that, with paying the consultation fee. Because it's a unique service, and they do get a lot of time, and I follow up with them and I make sure that whatever we decide to do is working. And because it takes time, this approach does take time. It's not a quick fix. So I make sure that, you know, I'm keeping people on board with what we're doing and they're following through with the treatments. So, you know, my consults are actually starting points. It's a process and working with the, you know, with the pets, but it does work, and it can be a successful business model. And yeah, vets do need to change the way they think about practice, but, you know, in their defense, that's how they're trained. They're not taught anything different. You know, the average veterinarian doesn't know anything about running a business. And they aren't trained in nutrition and things like this. They're literally trained to be drug pushers. That's because these big pharmaceutical companies, these corporations, are also funding the vets. So it's really a big racket. And the only way vets get, you know, start practicing something different, they just have to, like what I did, just decide, you know, this isn't working. This isn't good for our pets. There's got to be another way. And then you have to learn it on your own, because the profession overall isn't going to help you in that regard.
Well, look, the truth of the matter is the largest veterinarian pet food lines, okay, they own the largest number of veterinary hospitals,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So the same company that owns Royal Canin veterinary line of pet feed, they're one of the top five multi-billion dollar corporations in the pet feed industry, and conveniently the most recommended prescription feed sold in veterinary clinics all over North America. That comes from an article from Adored Beast. And this article is a great article. It's called, "Is Raw Pet Food a Faux Pas with Your Vet?" Is raw food a faux pas with your vet? And I think you and I could say most of the time it is. And in this article, it says veterinarians are the only medical profession that recommends highly processed bagged feed over fresh food diets. And then they claim that that supports health and longevity. And that includes Canada and the American Veterinary Medical Associations and the American Animal Hospital Association.
Yeah, because they're all getting kickbacks from these big companies. I mean, it's like, you know, if you took your toddler into the pediatrician and they gave you a box of Fruit Loops and said, this is all you ever need to feed your child. Like, how healthy would they be? And that's about the nutritional content in your average bag of kibble.
Well, look, in the human world, a healthy diet is qualified in terms of freshness and variety. And then you look at what they deem as the correct diet in the pet world, and it's qualified through whether or not it follows the AASCO, the nutritional guidelines, regardless of ingredient quality or freshness. And right, it's designed for processed animal feed, not fresh food.
Right. And they can put pretty much anything in those foods and then throw some synthetic vitamins and minerals on them, and they'll meet AFCO standards. AFCO standards are nothing to brag about. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me if it's AFCO approved, because I know their standards are just ridiculously low.
Well, and that's why I think that people are taken aback when I get an email and they say, hey, is your food AAFCO approved? And I say, absolutely not.
And there's a reason for that.
And they're like, what? And I'm like, no, do you understand what you're asking? Right. Do you understand what you're asking there? And they typically don't. They think it's a better thing. And so you look at the craziness of what happens with what is deemed healthy for dogs. And we see what most people think is healthy for dogs, because you just got to go down that pet, you know, aisle, the pet food aisle in a grocery store or in Sam's or in Costco, wherever you go. And it hurts my heart every time I go through there, right? Because everything is processed and colored and it's just sterile and crap.
Have you ever said anything to somebody like in the checkout line when you see this big bag of crappy food in their cart? I've always been tempted, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I'd probably just keep my mouth shut. But
yeah, they'd be like, no.
Who the hell are you?
No, but I will tell you this, that I have been very tempted during the, you know, mask. Everybody's got to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And I didn't wear a mask, and somebody was in front of me and they want to say something about a mask. And I want to look in their cart and say, let me show you how you can keep yourself healthy. You don't have to wear that mask. Just take that out of your cart, that out of your cart, and that out of your cart.
That's great.
Right. So, you know, no. But back to this flat-nosed, oxygen-deprived dog. Do you think that we might see liver problems with people because of all the masking? I mean, we are diluting our oxygen uptake.
Yeah, could well be. But then they're just going to get diagnosed with COVID. So, you know, because everything is COVID these days.
You want to hear something? I don't know if you know Dr. Thomas Cowan
from the list. You know, I do. I've listened to some of his stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So Neely sent me a podcast on one that was back in June. Mm-hmm. And I found this very interesting. I'm just going to digress for a second, but I want to put this out there because I was so amazed by it. So they said, look, SARS-CoV-2 has never, nor has any virus actually ever been isolated. Okay, so we've heard that, right? It's never been isolated. So in this podcast, they were talking about, and they went to testify to a group, and they said, we have all of our scientific, you know, research. These guys really do research, right? We do trials, we do this, we do that. And he said they brought in somebody that they thought was going to basically shut us down. Because the opponent said, well, this virus is so small that we cannot isolate it. So Cowan's team said this, all right, well, if this virus is in bodily fluids, doesn't matter what bodily fluids, do you want snot? Do you want blood? Do you want spitum? Whatever, how you say that word. What do you want? Let's mix. Can we mix two people's fluids together and isolate, you know, the virus? And he said, no, it's too small. He said, how about 10 people? Nope, nope. How about 100? No. He said, how about 10,000? If we mix 10,000 people's bodily fluid, can we isolate the virus? And they said, no, we cannot. And he said, and we went up higher in our numbers and then they just stopped talking. They stopped answering.
It's like they got the point.
Yeah.
That he was trying to make.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I've listened to his stuff, him and Andrew Kaufman do yes. a lot of co-presenting. And this whole thing about viruses like don't exist, and that like even like measles and polio, HIV, never been an isolated virus. And so the premise is that these diseases are created and we're told that it's because of a virus, but there's more to the picture and what's actually causing these diseases. And it's not just a straight viral cause. And they talk a lot about parasites and other toxins and things like that contributing to these disease states. So yeah, I think that's quite interesting. I think our whole paradigm of medicine, you know, really, really needs to shift, and it needs to go back to the basic plant medicine and herbs and homeopathy and all these things that were used for hundreds, even thousands of years before big pharma took hold, which was only what, 80, 90 years ago, when Rockefeller and Carnegie discovered how much money they could make doing drugs. And they shut down all education in natural medicine. They shut it down. They took it out of the mainstream medical schools. That was the premise. You know, it's natural medicine is, you know, kind of treated like it's this new age woo-woo sort of thing. It's been around so much longer than any of these pharmaceutical drugs, and it worked. It, you know, was effective. Chinese medicine's been around for thousands of years, but there's no evidence that it works, right? Because nobody nobody's going to fund the study to show that an herbal formula is effective, because they make way more money selling drugs.
Yeah. And they actually said the exact same thing that we say all the time with pets. They said, and what we talk about all the time, it is a study, a hands-on study, and that we have to have a hands-on watching patterns. We can see patterns, and then we change which way we're going based on this or based on that. But we don't just go down this one road and say, okay, here's your symptom, here's your pill. And they said, that's not real science. And they were just basically talking about that real science is being attacked, right? Real science is being made to look like it's bad. And you're just like, what has been suppressed? What has been hidden that we don't know about? You know, just this whole ivermectin. It's off label, which means that nobody's making big bucks on it, right? Mm-hmm, right? It's off label. But in that same conversation, this was another podcast I was listening to. I was listening to another podcast about, they did a study with 780, I believe these were healthcare professionals. Half of the group, they put on the ivermectin for 10 weeks. No one in the ivermectin group, not one single person, not one got ill. Of the group who did not take this ivermectin, 58% of them got ill. It always worries me when we're suppressed, right? Because for instance, Dr. Jacek, let's just say that these Frenchies, the only reason, let's just hypothesize for a second, that the only reason that those liver enzymes go up is because they cannot get enough oxygen into their body. And I have seen this over and over again, where they will go in for a spay or a neuter, and now they are told that this dog has is going to die. You know, the liver is just totally, you know, degrading, and they have to do this and this and this and this. And it was just oxygen.
That's really interesting. You know, another thing I've heard about those, the brachycephalic breeds with the short noses, is that oftentimes they're born via C-section because their heads are big and mom can't deliver, especially in the, like the bulldogs. And I listened to a lecture once and they said what those dogs, same like in human babies, they missing that exposure to the vaginal canal. They miss that initial inoculation of their microbiome, because that's where it comes from, is from mom's vagina. And they're missing that by being born sterilely via a C-section. So their guts. So another thing we see in these breeds is a lot of gut issues, and that, you know, missing that initial inoculation of that microbiome, I think could also be playing a big role there. And, you know, the respiratory tract also has its own unique microbiome. We need, you know, bacteria, like, get this bad rep for being bad, but the percentage of truly pathogenic bacteria is really small compared to all the beneficial bacteria that are out there. So I wonder if, you know, if that plays a role. And then, you know, I'll just get on my, you know, little soapbox here about ethical breeding practices. So if this were true, then we need to be changing how we're breeding these dogs. And, you know, a lot of dogs are bred for a certain look. Whoever decides what a dog's supposed to look like in the show ring, dogs are bred for that. But it oftentimes leads to health problems. We've seen this so much. The German Shepherds with the sloping back led to, you know, hip dysplasia and, you know, all, you know, other kinds of issues. You can tell in a heartbeat the shepherds that were bred for the show ring and the ones that were actually bred for, you know, performance activities, because the ones that were bred for performance have to be structurally sound. So, you know, so they're bred for that. Collies were bred for these really long, skinny noses. And then that created eye problems because their eyes were so tiny. And then there was a genetic link to eye disease. They were going blind. So humans, you know, can be really good screwing things up. But, you know, some of these breeds that are just bred for a certain look, I think we need to look at what, especially when we're seeing health trends in certain breeds, we need to be looking at, okay, do we need to be breeding for different characteristics? And, you know, that people that are, you know, locked into their breed and what their breed is supposed to look like and the breed standards and all that, they don't want to change so easily.
Well, I asked that question. I said, all right, so these dogs aren't getting enough oxygen. What's the solution? And she said exactly what you said. She said, stop breeding them that way.
Exactly. Duh.
And I'm like,
that's all I can say to that.
Right? Stop breeding them that way. Julianne said, I'm not anti anything except anti-suppression.
Yeah. And well,
she said, and she was talking about, she was trying to say this in a nice way about Cytopoint and Apoquil. Because I asked her about that, because a lot of people that came on, you know, obviously it was leaky gut, itchy dog, Cytopoint, Apoquil. And she said, look, I'm not against pharmaceutical drugs when used properly. I'm not against, traditional veterinarian practices when used properly. She said, but I'm not anti anything except I'm anti suppression. So when she said, I don't believe that my dogs or my, she has a python, cats, a one-legged duck, a pot-belly pig who's blind, and horses. And so she has
quite the menagerie.
Yeah, she does. And she said, but I don't believe that my dogs are happiest when they're suppressed.
No. Right.
Right. And so these drugs are immune suppressants, right?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And so she was saying, although at some point, you know, the immune system may need to be suppressed for a time because it's, you know, eating itself and doing some damage. But she said, by and large, animals, people, living beings do not want to be suppressed on any level. And I thought that that was interesting. And she gave this analogy where, and I think that we might see this just around the world, but she said, let's take a pipe. And she said, and this pipe has got a hole in it and it's leaking. And she said, and now you come in and put a suppression on it, you know? And so it's like wrapping a Band-Aid or wrapping mm-hmm. some sort of cloth around this pipe. And you're pushing it down and pushing it down. And that hole underneath is getting bigger and bigger and bigger mm-hmm. as you're suppressing. And she said, and if that breaks loose or you take it off, she said, then it is, you know, it's like a bing, it goes the other direction. Hard yeah. and fierce.
Yep. And I see that a lot in, you know, the skin cases that have been on the Apoquels and the prednisone and the suppressive medicines for long periods of time. And now I'm careful to warn people. I said, look, when we wean off of these, we may get a flare up, but we have to allow the immune system to get re-educated. It doesn't know what to do. It's been suppressed. So it doesn't even know how to properly do its job. And yeah, it's like, you know, you're holding down a spring and you take that pressure off the spring and boing, you know, you're going to get a flare up. I think conventional medicine can be absolutely wonderful in the short term. If we need it, even things like antibiotics, if used appropriately, if we know there's a bacterial infection and we know that the pet is suffering with that. But I will tell you, I was talking to a client earlier this week whose dog was diagnosed with a urinary tract infection. And they did a culture and everything. They did culture bacteria. But then automatically, she lives down in Colorado Springs. So her more conventional vet down there said automatically 3 weeks on antibiotics. And she said, this is an older dog with other health issues. My dog couldn't survive that. And I said, you don't need 3 weeks. You probably need 3 days, because on an appropriate antibiotic, if you know you have a bacterial infection and you know you're using the appropriate antibiotic, probably 3 to 5 days, along with other support, right? So we're supporting the body's natural healing ability. You know, we're doing the good nutrition and maybe some supplements to help support good urinary tract health. And then we just nail those bacteria for a few days with an appropriate antibiotic, knock them down enough, then the body can get on top of it. You go 3 weeks and the effects of those antibiotics are going to be worse than the UTI. And I see that all the time. Why are we automatically putting them on antibiotics for a month they're not even checking. They're like, well, here's your month's worth of antibiotics, come back then. I say, let's do 3 to 5 days, check them. And if we're getting a handle on this, we stop the antibiotics. And then we, you know, do the more natural support.
Where did this idea that you've got to finish all of your, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to give you 3 weeks and you must finish all of this or you're endangering your dog or people. Where'd this come from?
I don't know. Probably the pharmaceutical companies that are selling the drugs. If I had to guess, you know, you know, I wanted to go, I was thinking of something when you were talking about Dr. Cohen, because I've heard him and some other practitioners say this too, that for a practitioner to be allowed to look at his or her clinical experience and give that validity, practitioners have been trained like not to do that. Like I look at my experience, like, okay, I'm seeing this pattern. I see a lot of pets diagnosed with cancer within 3 months of getting around to vaccines. Now I don't have a research study that says vaccines cause cancer, but I'm seeing this pattern over and over and over and over and over again. And when you're old like me and been practicing a long time, I'm going to give that a lot of credence, more so sometimes in some of these research studies that are done on, you know, lab animals that are, you know, specially bred for laboratory experiments. And it's an artificial situation. It's not a real world situation because it's such a, like a controlled environment. I am going to give, you know, more weight to my clinical experience than a lot of research studies. But I think practitioners, they don't trust themselves to do that. They, even if they see it, they don't trust themselves because it's not, you know, they're not hearing it in a lecture. There's not a research study that says it. It's not written up in an article in a journal. And even though they're seeing it day after day after day, we hear these stories about the COVID patients dying in the hospital and they're not doing anything differently. You know, and I think the same thing happens in veterinary medicine. More and more and more pets are getting cancer, but they'll say nutrition doesn't matter. My clients tell me that all the time. They'll ask their veterinary oncologist, you know, what should I feed my pet? Oh, it doesn't matter. Diet doesn't matter. That's what they're all told. That doesn't matter. I'm like, how can it not matter? I mean, how can you even just no medical training, look at it logically. How can what you're feeding a pet not impact their health? It doesn't even make any sense, but that's what they've been trained and they're just not trained to think. It's just, we just have a culture of blind sheep out there.
Absolutely. I have to tell you this. So my brother, I think I've said this before, during the in Oklahoma, he was just so mad about the senselessness that was going on. He would literally walk through stores with his phone with the sheep playing.
That's great.
But you know, I do want to challenge, if you don't believe what we say, okay, I do want to challenge our pet parents. This, if you go in to your vet and because your dog is itchy and you're wanting to know why your dog's itchy, right? But your vet comes back with this. He says, your dog is itchy because he has flea allergy dermatitis or atopic dermatitis or food allergy dermatitis or contact dermatitis or scarcopic mange. That is just a list of itchy diseases. That is not anything about what causes this disease. All right. So this is the typical answer. And this comes from Dr. William Faulkner. He has an article on this about itchy dogs and Cytopoint and Apoquil. And he said, you know, the itch, this is what board certified veterinarian dermatologist, typically you take a dog in, they're going to say, yep, your dog has atopic dermatitis. Oh, okay. What do I do now? Well, give him this pill or give him this drug. We have not addressed why. Right. Why do I have flea allergy dermatitis or atopic dermatitis or food allergy issues?
And things like Demodex, you know, most dogs have some small population of demodectic mites. That's a condition of immunosuppression. And that's why we see it in young dogs. You know, guess what? After all those puppy shots, which I think all those puppy vaccines end up suppressing the immune system more than they end up helping with anything. But yeah, if we're doing something to suppress the itch and it's because that the underlying cause is immunosuppression and we're suppressing the immune system further, man, that pet is just going to get sicker and sicker and sicker. And they will end up with cancer, or some more serious autoimmune disease or something like that. We have to support the immune system and help the body to do what it knows what to do. And yeah, if we had a really bad mite infestation, and I mean, I've seen some of these dogs, they are just chewing and biting themselves raw. Yeah, we might need to treat them with something to kill the mites. But again, we're doing that in conjunction with good diet, supporting, you know, a good healthy immune system. So when those mites are gone, then the body can come in and heal the skin.
All right, everybody. Well, listen, you can work with Dr. Judy Jasek. Your dog's itchy. She's going to help get to the root cause of the itchiness. All right. We need a second opinion. You want to not be bullied. You want to feel like you have somebody on your side to help your dog become the healthiest and happiest it can be. Well, you've got myself and you've got Dr. Judy Jasek. You can find Dr. Jasek at ahavet.com. You can do phone consults from wherever you are in the country. So get over
the
there.
World.
In the world, right.
All the world.
In the world. We are world famous now. We are happy to help you get on a species appropriate diet here at Raw Dog Food and Company. Don't let our menu overwhelm you. We have tons of stuff. Yes, we do. Doesn't matter where you start. Meat, bones, organ, and fat. Just start. Wolfram Plus, Turkey PMR. It doesn't matter. Right? Just get started and we will help you, because here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business, and friends don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.